years.
Yeah, really interesting. I mean, my own reaction felt interesting to me, do you know what I mean? Yeah, like somehow this kind of completely broke my thinking. Yeah, I couldn't remember the question I was raising, or like what, like completely.
But if we continue to think of capitalism as something that is not rigid,
in
relationship to that situation, maybe.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear more about this financialization of
If you want to hear about that, then go and talk to Kaushik, actually, because he's really good on it. So you can find the person you want to talk to. If you want to talk about financialization, I think that would be a good idea. I guess we'll end up talking about social reproduction and care more than anything. We don't have that much time, so please start if you have things you want to say.
Okay, I have a question. I don't know whether this is the topic you want to focus on, but when you just discussed about this, space outside, I was always thinking of, don't we have to think about this in dialectical terms? So, for example, that the way reproduction can be, or the way reproduction is also part of valorization has to do with the fact that it is kind of outside of capital, and that's why it can. I'm missing the English words now.
Yeah, sorry that I don't speak any German, but maybe someone can help.
So, so that when we try to think of this outside space, it can always get inserted in the valorization system. But it always also has to be kind of outside, because we have to think of it in a dialectical way. What makes it so difficult to think of an outside space? Maybe.
Yeah,
I
suppose one question would be, in a way, why are there particular forms of labour that might need to be thought of as outside, and other forms of labour that get to more easily be thought about as inside? So it would be a question about whether certain forms of emotional labour or caring labour or labour that doesn't produce anything, for example. I mean, in a way, that was one of the problems that feminists had with Marxism, was that it couldn't really conceptualise forms of labour that, in a very obvious way, don't produce anything. I mean, washing dishes doesn't produce anything, it produces more dishes. So there is a question about what needs to get relegated into one pole, if you like, in order for the other pole to have meaning or value. So I think that's an interesting question, isn't it? Like, how socially do we then conceptualize or imagine the meaning of different forms of labor? This is not a question and answer, this is a discussion, so, do people have other thoughts about the point that's just been made?
Just move closer, because it's hard to hear. I want to think with you all about the idea of when we have more sort of ambiguous ways of working or ways of practicing in the world, when there are not such strong definitions between work and leisure time, and it's often a mental kind of idea of whether one is working, like being here, whether I'm working or whether I'm in a different kind of construct. How do we think about value, how do you think about sort of even rest within these kinds of times, how do you think about hedonism within these kinds of times, something that has been bothering me.
Yeah. I mean, I suppose the sort of strong argument that comes through that Cederström and Fleming work that I was citing is that this idea about a kind of flexible, indeterminate relationship between work and leisure is itself precisely what is promoted by capital in order for, in their terms, to keep labour living, so that there may be a sort of idea that we're not working any longer in the kinds of Fordist models of work, but that there is something that's sort of sold back to us, I suppose, around flexibility, for example, or a kind of creative relationship between life and work that very easily gets sold again. So the question seems to be, in what way could one maintain a relationship with that mode of working that is somehow not also already commodified? Then there's also a question about what the difficulty with the commodification is, actually.
But would that mean that we need more categories? Because now it feels like it's either leisure or work, or it is a labor with product, labor without product.
Yeah.
And it feels that against this, there is this, everything becomes work, or it's all confused.
Yeah. Well, Boris Groys has this interesting idea about the project, yeah, that the project becomes the vehicle in which everyone is working on something. Yeah, everyone has a project. And so you see the projectification of work, so even, you know, certainly within, I would say almost all industries now, work is parcelled up into projects, yeah, that have sort of discrete goals and aims, and they're managed in certain kinds of packages. But equally, you know, one of the classic things, you know, when you meet someone in the street now would be to say, not how are you, but what are you working on, right? So the idea of working on something becomes a way to talk about the kind, exactly what you were saying, this perhaps sort of sense that one has a relation to this thing called work, that one doesn't necessarily want to be the form of work that is on offer, but working on becomes a way to articulate a relationship with something. And the psychoanalyst that I mentioned, a French psychoanalyst who's very interested in the idea of work as actually something to do with encountering the obstacle. So when something's flowing, it's not working. Okay, something is only working when it encounters some form of resistance. That's what work actually means. It's the energy that is required to overcome. So as a dancer, you know exactly what I'm talking about, right? So in that sense, one could think about work as working as nothing to do with work. Working as something that you're doing all the time as you encounter the resistance of the world. And that to me seems a really productive way of thinking about working. That somehow does make a distinction between even the project, what one is working on, is not the same as, are you working?
Yeah, because the worst thing is you say the life becomes also a project, or we have to have project in life, not only in work.
Like,
having a kid becomes a project.
Absolutely.
So that this idea is very helpful, because then working becomes living or...
Yeah. Working is the encountering of endless problems. You were going to ask him.
I was very curious to hear about this fourth industrial revolution that we're living through, and how the nature of work is about to dramatically be redefined together with the social contract, and there are questions of universal basic income, or the commodification of care, as you phrased it earlier.
Yeah.
And I was wondering if these kinds of topics are, you are also engaging with them in the sense of, you said earlier, just a moment ago, when something is flowing, it's not working.
Yeah.
And care, in one sense, I think, is a flow. I was quite curious to hear.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think of care as a flow. I mean, I think of care as a process of bearing and managing frustration. Yeah, I mean, if we think about, right at the beginning of yesterday, when we were talking about questions right at the beginning, and I brought up an idea about the difference of what it is in maternal care that is required very early on in order to, if you like, bear frustration, what might allow an infant to bring on something called thinking, a psychic apparatus that can do something that might approach something like flow, it would be through the very practice of needing to manage an intensely frustrated state of mind. And that's an extremely difficult thing for all of us to do, right? I mean, so I don't think of care as flowing. Okay. And I don't think care flows from one individual to the next, or from, you know, care is a very arduous, often mundane, boring, repetitive, but also frustrating process. So my sense of what it might mean to get a life, we can't get a life unless there is something called care. We just can't. We are, aren't we, born too early to do that. Just structurally, we are born too early to care for ourselves. So then there has to be some kind of understanding of an entity that is able to manage the state of frustration. I call that care.
Yeah.
Yeah? But that doesn't solve what you were talking about, which is the fourth industrial revolution and the basic income.
The role of machines in care, or a social contract or something like this.
Yeah, I think, I mean, I don't know what people think about this. I think machines have an enormous role. I mean, I do think of care as technology. So you think about breastfeeding and you think about, it's a technology, right? It's a technology that involves all sorts of technology, not simply something called the human breast. So, of course. But I'm not sure that that shifts things dramatically. What do you all think?
But when care becomes sort of capital, also force, when the caretakers become paid people, that also changes the dynamic. And then there's difference between care as a mother to children, and there's difference when there's a person paid to do so.
Well, I think care is always paid. I mean, it's just hidden. That's part of what that Marxist feminist work is about. Okay, so it might not be paid in terms of a wage, but it is paid in other ways. And so I don't think of care as some altruistic flowing of love. I mean, I'm talking about it as a mechanism that is held within a process of exchange. And yeah, I mean, care is, in terms of mothering, I mean, mothering has always been a spread and shared project, yeah? So I'm not talking about biological mothers, but only. And historically, biological mothers have to be the sole carers of their children. So socially, we can organize, and historically, we do shift modes of parental care. There is a question whether there is an element within whatever it is we're calling care in which something comes to matter to you. The labor that you're doing comes to matter to you in some ways, not outside of, but in addition to whatever we think of as payment. And that can happen to any of us. So my definition of a child is anyone we come to name and claim as a child, including an adult. And my definition of the maternal would be anyone whose life unfolds in relation to the unfolding of another life. So I'm not really talking about maternal care in any other way than that. But I think that relation, the relation of the unfolding of one life in relation to the unfolding of another, does often entail, and not always, the coming to matter of that labor to us in a way that exceeds the wage. And that interests me. Like, how do we describe that within capitalism? What is that? Does it lie outside? You know, what do we do about that? So something overflows or exceeds the wage in that situation. And it can happen in myriad forms, I think. Maybe I should have explained that at the beginning. More thoughts?
Yeah, I always think that it's so difficult to And when you just look at the activity itself, you can't really determine other way around. it always depends on in what kind of infrastructures, determining infrastructures, activities happen. So whether you call it work or care, or whether you can, the same activity can be more work or more something like outside of a working relation, and this doesn't lie in the activity itself. It just depends on in what kind of infrastructures it happens. So what I mean, for example, is when you're in a society where like right now, where a lot of responsibility lies on the individual. So also the responsibility, for example, like you said, to take care of oneself.
Yeah.
Where maybe the social infrastructures are shrinking, so you have more responsibility to do that yourself. Then the way you take care of yourself, this kind of activity also has another meaning than in a society where this is organized differently.
Absolutely. But I suppose if we went to someone like Lauren Ballant's work, you know, thinking about projects of survival in post-war, you know, in the dying moments of the post-war settlement, in terms of a frayed relationship with whatever the fantasy of the good life might look like, then I think she's still trying to work away at the issue about attachment. What do we remain attached to? Even if it is a fantasy of something like the good life, regardless of one's, not regardless, but out of whatever one's structural position is, including, as you say, the falling away of institutions like care and many other social structures that allow for relationality to flourish. She's saying in a non-flourishing situation, in a situation of diminishing resources, there is still an issue about attachment. Like, we still somehow seem to need to prop up that fantasy one way or another. So she talks about overeating, for example, as a way to maintain a relationship of some kind with the comfort of food, even as overeating is extremely bad for us. Okay, so that's a really interesting conjunction in a way. In what sense is that self-care? She's trying to argue that that is a form of self-care, mm-hmm. in a way that the whole discussions around obesity and whatever, actually that these are attempts at self-care in conditions of poverty, in which one tries to stay close to the object that might have once literally caused you to flourish, but now is actually causing you damage. But nevertheless, we remain somehow attached. And I guess that's what I come back to. I'm interested in that mechanism or element of attachment that remains within that relation, that I think has still something to do with this notion of working. So we're working at something there. We're working at remaining attached to an idea of a good life, or of the idea of sustenance. We're working at that. We're not working at it in terms of a project. The project is survival, right? Work is what you do all day for a wage. But there you're working at something called attachment. And that seems to me the element that I'm interested in getting at, that is distinctive, what makes the distinction between working and work. Which is something more like subjective survival, or there's some other element that is trying to survive beyond one's material survival. Something like that.
Would you say that, like, attachment to social media is also like that kind of attachment, like to social interaction or to your smartphone that gives you feedback, it makes you happy in small cues that get you attached?
You tell me, I don't use social media. You tell me, does it?
Yeah, it sounds for me like it's the same kind of attachment, because it's like a social need that you're like, it's something that you need for survival, kind of, I guess. And it seems like a way of fulfilling this need.
Would you say you're working?
Yeah, you're working on the project of survival, even though it might not get you the result that you're looking for.
Yeah. Yeah.
What can we make then? It sounds like it's also occupation. Or where, when it is occupation, when would it be working? Or I take my example, I don't use social media, but I have a smartphone and it's not very clear, like this gesture of, so something, yeah, I have something to do and I do it, but I have also this gesture because it's, there is 10 minutes or like, and then I would differentiate. So if I imagine if I would use social media, then I would have this both moments also, or I don't know, maybe you tell me.
You don't use it.
I mean, for example, having access to emails on your phone, you know, they pile up every day. If you don't check them, or at least I don't check them for 5 days, you know, it's a lot of work to go through them, and I can't delete them, all of them, because there might be one or two important ones, which are actually important to the work I do, and which would have a really negative effect on my continued work in the future. So I have to go through them.
Yeah.
And so sometimes when I'm in any kind of context, I just check, okay, I don't need that, I delete it. And it's,
oh, yeah, yeah.
It's a 2-3 click of labor.
Yeah, so there is a distinction there between working for capital, which is what you're doing when you clear your email, and some idea of, I think you were trying to get at something to do with this idea about being attached to something that might give you some form of sustenance.